We made USAA insurance to help you save. Take advantage of discounts when you cover your home and your ride. Discover how we're helping members save at usaa.com/bundle. USAA. Restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Boys in the Band podcast. But before we get into this one, we've got a quick message from our sponsors. Now, we know that out there we've got lots of musicians, we've got lots of producers, fellow podcasters even listening into these episodes. And I'm sure there's plenty of you out there who deal with audio files on a regular basis as well. And if you do, you'll know that it's easy to get lost amongst all of the various demos and versions of a file.
Yeah, indeed. And we've been in touch with a new tech startup called Aux, who are looking for beta testers for their software. Anyone who signs up gets 10 gigabytes of free storage and the ability to easily share their files with collaborators and discover like-minded creators.
Yep, so if you've been frustrated by the clunkiness of storing and sharing music, then head to aux.app/boysintheband. That's aux.app/boysintheband, all one word. Sign up today to become a beta tester for their software and get that 10 gigabyte of free storage.
Yep, get on that. And thanks very much to Aux for supporting the Boys in the Band podcast. Speaking of which, let's get on with this week's episode.
Hello and welcome to the Boys in the Band podcast, a Mind Naughty's number one edition. I'm Richard Gallagher.
And I'm Peter Smith. And on this episode, we're joined by Killian Gavin, frontman of Australian band Boy and Bear.
Yes, a band who've been going strong since 2009 and are over on a European tour while getting ready for their fifth studio album. So we caught up with Killian to chat a bit about their new music, how they got started back in the late noughties, and he picked out his favourite album from that era.
Yeah, lots of good stuff in there. So here he is, Killian Gavin from Boy and Bear on the Boys in the Band podcast, My Naughties number one album.
Right, this week on the Boys in the Band podcast, we've got a My Naughties number one special. We are joined by Killian Gavin from Boy and Bear. How's it going, Killian?
Very good, thank you. How about yourself?
Very good, thanks.
Yeah, we're good. Thank you. Good. Now, understand, well, you're touring around UK at the moment in Manchester. Bristol ticked off this week. Hackney Church on Saturday. How's it all going?
Yeah, it's really good. I mean, we've been pretty lucky. I think there's been a lot of sun around, which we don't always get on tour over here. So I'll take that. But no, it's been great. The show's been great, and everyone who's been coming out has been really enthusiastic crowd, so it's been nice. I think there's a bit of an appetite for live music again, so
yeah. Definitely feel that. It's still going now, even now, that sort of buzz of getting back to live shows after missing out for a year or two during the pandemic. Absolutely. And then you're off around Europe as well next week, so getting busy. Right.
Yeah I mean, it's been about 2 and a bit years since we were last here, so trying to get back to as many places as we can, you know.
Very cool. And so you were at Thekla in Bristol last night as we speak, an important venue in the UK scene. You enjoyed that one?
Yes, very much. It's a bit rowdy. It's a bit loud, but it is an interesting gig. I don't know what kind of boat it is, but you're beneath the deck in the stage on a boat. So I don't know. Everyone seems to enjoy it there. It's a pretty rowdy little city, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, good place for a night out, big time.
That's it.
Nice. So, Killian, latest single, Just to Be Kind, came out in September a month ago. Tell us about this latest music and what's coming next for you guys.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's the second single of this record that we've been piecing together for the last couple of years. So the album's probably not coming out till next year sometime. We actually got to the UK maybe a week ago or something, and the guy that's mixing the album, his name's Craig Silvey. So we were able to pop into his studio and finish mixing the last few tracks with him and signed off on all of that. So that's all been sort of wrapped up and getting ready to deliver and get some vinyl made. But Just to Be Kind sort of came out, like you say, about a month ago. And I don't know, that track's a little bit of an outlier in quite a good way. It's sonically probably a little bit further adrift in its palette than the rest of the songs. There's a lot more electronic instrumentation, a lot more like the whole groove section is basically drum machines. But it's cool. It's a bit of a ballad, I guess, but it's got a sort of darkness and electronic edge to it. So yeah, it's been fun to sort of slowly have some more new music out there.
Yeah. How did you find that sort of experience of, I guess, evolving the sound over, you know, you guys have been going for what, best part of, well, so it was about 2009, wasn't it? It all started for you guys. So how did you find that experience making new music now from then and sort of the journey you've been on in that time, the sounds that you're trying to create?
Yeah, I mean, there's been a number of years and a number of learning curves when you, when you've been doing it a while. Every record, I like to think we basically learn, try and learn anyway, as much as we can from the process. Earlier on in our career, we were, you know, producing, well, working with producers, I should say, or co-producing with some of them, particularly because, you know, there's a lot to learn from people who've been doing it for a long time. So we probably relied, I think we've always relied very heavily on live performance in the studio. So the band, no matter which way we piece together a song, is going to have some sort of performance element. I've definitely really valued that, and the rest of the guys really value that. I think it translates, a lot of the emotion of most of the music we listen to is probably because of the imperfect nature of a human performance. So I think we sort of do still center a lot of what we do around that sort of that performance element, but we've been letting ourselves drift further and further to embracing other ways of tracking and doing a little bit of multi-tracking on some of these records or some of these songs, pardon me. Just to be kind, used to be called Let You Go, so I keep making that Freudian slip every now and then. But Just to Be Kind is probably the one that went the furthest away from that. And, you know, Tim and I and the guys, we got together with a bunch of drum machines and sat down and did a lot more programming of drums and running in samples and sort of piecing together the groove section in an interesting sort of way. So we're sort of, we might do a bit of that these days, and a number of the tracks that we've been working on in this album have a lot of loops and have a lot of electronic drums to them. But often we marry that with an acoustic drum performance with the whole band over the top of it. And depending on the song, sometimes the live performance comes first and we might start using samples to reinforce or support some of the groove elements of the song. It's probably a process that started on our last record, Suck on Light. It's probably the first time we really started branching off into that, to that world, and having a little bit more, like elements sort of permeating throughout the songs. But yeah, I think we've embraced it. It's probably about half the record right now has sort of got some section of loops or, digital sort of software drums or anything like that going through it.
Does that go the other way as well in Killian? So obviously you take the live sound when you're sort of writing the songs and you've added this in. When you take it to the stage, you then incorporate that sort of, the loops and the synthetic stuff on stage as well?
We do, to various degrees. A song on our last record called Work of Art has a really big electronic groove section, and we basically went into the Pro Tools session and exported a lot of those sounds that we used on the record and loaded it into basically a Roland sort of drum machine. So Tim will play a lot of those using drum pads and be able to trigger a lot of the sounds, and then transition pretty seamlessly to the acoustic kit when he needs to. But we've found not every song works live with the same approach. So for example, Just to Be Kind, when we first sort of wrote the song but we hadn't yet recorded it, we'd done a few demos and we had a good idea of how the song works. We did the same thing. We had a few shows coming up. We thought we'd test the new song out on the road, and we loaded a lot of those sounds that we used and samples again into the drum machine. And when we played it live, it just felt flat. It felt a little bit restricted. It felt like it wasn't really doing the song justice. So we played maybe two or three shows like that. And I'm sorry for everyone who came to those shows and didn't think the song was good. But we sort of went back to the drawing board. And even though the song very much ended up with that sort of digital drums driving the whole song, when we play it live now, we just play acoustic drums. We feel like it allows us to lean forward in the right way live to play a snappy groove and give it a sense of excitement for the performance. So, yeah, it's not always, if we've done this, we will do this. But we do definitely go, is it benefiting the show? And if so, we will. Yeah.
Yeah, cool. Fascinating to hear. And yeah, really interesting to hear about the sort of evolution of the band over the years. And on our podcast, we tend to look back at years gone by, and we've heard of lots of bands who've launched their careers through things like MySpace. But we read interestingly about you guys, how you actually got your start back by sort of entering a radio competition with Triple J Unearthed back in 2009. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, wow. This is really going back. I mean, Triple J, I don't know if your audience will know much about them, but they're a national radio back home in Australia. Probably one of the few big radio stations that run nationally. So it's a public broadcaster, and it's been an amazing radio station for a lot of artists out of Australia, because they have a mandate which basically says we're going to play 50% of Australian music. Which is great if you're an Australian band in Australia wanting to get a head start. So we've been really lucky and really fortunate to have them on our side since the beginning. We I think we basically recorded our first song, and yeah, this is going back some time. We just finished the one song and we burnt it on a CD and wrote a little note on a bit of paper and mailed it in like you did back then. And it all just started from that. One of the presenters got that letter. I don't know how, but he did. And he started, his name's Dom Alessio, and he started playing the track, and it just went on and on from there. And then, yeah, that song ended up making this Unearthed competition, and then, yeah, winning it. So it was pretty cool. We basically, I can't remember what it was. We won $500 or something silly. Oh, maybe it was not bad. Maybe we won a slot at a festival back in Sydney called Homebake, which doesn't run anymore. But if you grew up in Sydney and you're my age, you went to Homebake a lot. So that was probably the best sort of thing you could ever win as a young, you know, musician growing up in Sydney. So we got to open up the show for Homebake. And then, yeah, pretty much from there, they've been a really big supporter of the band and has really helped us along our way.
Yeah, interesting. So what was it like then being in a guitar band down in Australia at that time? We've spoken to, well, we had someone from Jet on the podcast. We're obviously big fans of the Vines, you know, two Australian bands who really made a mark at that point and among this sort of wider global boom in guitar music. So what was it like for you guys at that time, I guess, you know, deciding you're going to go for it in back in 2009?
It's a pretty good question. I think you have to try. I always say when people ask me similar questions to this, that to like, this is a generalization, but to largely make it in music or the arts or anything, you have to find yourself in a very fortunate period of life where you have very little commitment and the ability to risk it all, I should say. You know, we were pretty young, you know, we were maybe 22 when our first record came out. So maybe 20 or something when we started, I can't quite remember, but it was a time where I guess we could be like, there's nothing in our lives we want to do. You know, we don't really, most of us, we're living at home, don't have rent and things like that. So any sort of dollar we may have made at a show, we can reinvest it into more recording time and studio time and pay for a flight to do a show in a different city. So, yeah, there's a lot of hands-on stuff back then. I think it does really require a lot of sacrifice. And if you're willing to do it, like us and like a lot of bands, you're probably going to do it for a long time before you make a living out of it. So you do have to really be in that time of life where you can manage that sort of period of time and however long it takes. So, yeah, I mean, it didn't really have much of a question for us. It's probably all I ever wanted to do, and very lucky that we're still doing it right now, to be honest. But it's something I'm very proud of, though. We worked really hard, and like most people were busy going to uni or getting a proper job and earning money and eventually, you know, buying houses while we were just sitting around in the garage and trying to write songs and thinking about the next tour we might be able to go on. So yeah, it's all encompassing, but it's also worth it if it works out.
Yeah, very cool. So who were those sort of early influences and inspirations that, you know, inspired you to pick up a guitar and form a band in the first place?
Well, I listened to my very first album ever was the Beatles' Help. My dad had a cassette and he was moving on to CDs well and truly. So he was getting rid of his cassettes. And I said, that's the album I want to keep. So I kept that And pretty much from there, I was about 12 years old, I think, when I started getting my own sort of real influence in music. And I was my first CD then when I was 12, I bought was Nirvana, Nevermind. That pretty much was the album that inspired me to play guitar. So up until that point, I played piano. I spent an awful year trying to play the recorder, as a lot of us do. I joined, you know, the school bands and did all that kind of stuff. But when I started listening to Nirvana as a little kid, I was like, that's it, I'm going to learn guitar. So I jumped on board. And there's been a few bands throughout the years where I'd get their album and I would just have to learn every single song on the album. And you would sit around and you'd start learning to train your ear to figure out the songs. And if I couldn't train my ear well enough, I'd jump on the early days of the internet and bring up the tablature and wait for the dial-up internet to connect. And I don't know. It was like it's a pretty consuming thing once you catch the I can't even remember what the expression is, but whatever, when you catch the bug or whatever it is. It takes your focus.
Absolutely. Well, this sort of leads us, Killian, towards your favorite album of that first decade of the 2000s. What have you gone for?
Well, I was sort of a bit concerned about bringing this album because the artist is maybe a little bit on the nose over the last few years with a little bit of bad publicity. But I decided to still do it because the album was really important to me in my formative years as learning to play guitar and learning to write songs. So it's Ryan Adams, which, you know, like I said, could be contentious, but I still think it's an incredible album. And that whole period in the early sort of noughties, I think Ryan Adams was probably at his peak, if you ask me. He released maybe, I think, three albums in 2005, and this was one of them that came out. Similar to Nirvana, it was a record that I spent a lot of time with. It was a record that I had to learn how to play on guitar every single song. And oddly enough, there's a number of songs on this record that I still play at soundcheck while I'm just making sure my guitar sounds right. You know, I think the way both Ryan Adams and the Cardinals use the guitar, particularly on that album, has been super influential for how I see the use of guitar and songwriting. It's very much this blend of leads with rhythm, and there's no sort of separation of the two roles. They constantly move in and out of being expressive and being supportive, and that sort of approach with guitar is probably something I hold pretty true to. I guess that's my little intro. It's a great album.
Yeah, absolutely. As you say, it's well, we had an interesting conversation about this on the podcast a couple of weeks ago about how reputations of singers or artists can perhaps affect sometimes how we look back on albums, but then sometimes they stand separately almost from the people who were singing the songs or making that music at that time because of the connection they've got with us. And it sounds like it's like that for you with this one. Why this one perhaps more than his, I guess, perhaps more commercially recognized ones like Heartbreaker or Gold that came before this one?
This one was probably the one that I really discovered my love for Ryan Adams. So whilst I knew of those albums when they came out, I think just when this album came out was really just coincided with my growth in my love for songwriting. So it's probably just one of those things about right time, right place kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
He was super prolific, wasn't he? Because even by that point, he'd released like five albums in 5 years, one after the other. And then bam, like you say, he comes with three albums in 1 year, like Cold Roses, Jacksonville City Lights, and 29, all in 2005. So, yeah, he had a lot to choose from as a Ryan Adams.
Yeah, fan. I know. And so, those three albums in that 1 year are probably up there as my all-time favorites from Ryan Adams. You know.
It's
hard to choose.
So to expand a bit more on that, because like I agree that his sort of sound did kind of change a bit in that year. He seemed to be going through a different sort of phase of his music. So
yes,
what was it about that sort of that particular phase of his music that grabbed you?
I'm not really into country music. I have no dislike of it. It's just never really been my thing. I think this record was more my introduction into alternative country, as they sort of call it these days. And up until then, I'd probably never really heard of it. You know, growing up, I was always going to the record stores and there was just the pop section and then there was the alternative section. So everything sort of fit under that umbrella. But I think with the internet and, you know, distribution becoming so rapid and changing so much, we do get all these big subgenres that carry a lot of influence. So you do get these old country sort of musicians, and old country is a very well-known genre now in itself. So for me, this album was my complete introduction to that genre. And I remember for a long time, I'd go off and try and find other artists that had a similar sort of sound. And I mean, I don't think I was that successful in finding others, but there's definitely a sweet spot of mine. If I'm, you know, using Spotify or something and there's a certain playlist that feels this sort of this sound, I could definitely put it on while I'm cooking and really enjoy it. And had I not spent enough time with these sort of albums, I don't think I'd be saying the same thing right now. It's something in its melancholy nature that takes it out of something I probably wouldn't enjoy and brings it into something that I would connect with in a pretty big way. So he's, I mean, we bring along of those, we bring a lot of those sort of similar themes when we talk about Wayne Baer's songwriting. We try and constantly walk this line of what we call happy sad, where the song, for lack of a better term, can feel both happy and sad. And it is that another way of sort of, yeah, incorporating that, well, encapsulating that sort of melancholic sort of thing. So that album particularly was probably a birth of my affinity with that style of music. So that's probably it, to be honest.
Cool. And obviously that was released across a couple of CDs, wasn't it? So a nice package you got when you would have bought it back then. But anyone who maybe thinking about going and have a listen now, probably streaming it on Spotify or something like that, not getting the whole package. But what songs would you recommend they dip into first to sort of get that feeling for it?
The Easy Plateau is probably my favorite song on the record.
Yeah.
There's a couple that fit a certain feel, and I don't really know what it is. They're maybe a little bit more upbeat, acoustic-driven, sort of old country sort of song. So Easy Plateau, Let It Ride, Magnolia Mountain, and, of course, Cold Roses as well. Yeah. They probably sum up that whole old country theme to me in a nutshell, those ones, you know.
Yeah, and it's actually looking for it on Spotify. You have to go to Ryan Adams and the Cardinals rather than just Ryan Adams. It's not listed there.
That's right.
Also, just thinking about Ryan Adams, he was quite one of the particular producers that he worked with quite famously was with Ethan Johns, who actually worked with on your third record as well. Any sort of relationship to any connection to your relationship with Ryan Adams that you really wanted to work with Ethan?
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. I mean, it wasn't limited to Ryan Adams by any means. Ethan had made a lot of great records that all five of us have individually spent a lot of time with, from some of the Kings of Leon stuff to the Laura Marling stuff to the Ryan Adams. So he's done, Rella Montaigne as well. So, I mean, Ethan's an incredible producer. He's a phenomenal musician. And we actually, when we were getting ready to make that record, we had a bunch of songs and we were on tour in the UK and we were on tour in America, and we had a short list of a number of producers that we were, you know, pretty keen to work with, and Ethan was one of them and a bunch of others. But we just made sure we got some time in the schedule to go and say hi and have a bit of a hang and try and just see what their sort of vibe and their energy would be before we decided to make the album with them. So when we met up with Ethan, he caught the train into London and we met him and we had some lunch and we were having a chat and we were, you know, just sort of, like I said, sussing out the vibe. And at the end of it, we were like, this guy's great. Like, he seems like a really lovely dude. And we were talking pretty open with him, and we sort of said, you know, basically this whole lunch from our perspective is to make sure you just, excuse my French, make sure you're not a dickhead, we said. And he was like, he sort of laughed and said back to us, that's exactly why he turned up. He wanted to make sure we weren't dickheads either. So it was sort of fortuitous in the way it all worked out. But after that, we were like, yeah, he's the guy. And I'm really sort of taken aback when I think about, you know, the sort of echelon that Ethan comes from and history between himself, his dad and his uncle, and the kind of artists that they've all worked with is remarkable. So to have made an album with him is, yeah, probably up there, one of the, you know, most sort of special things I'll do in my life.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, just going to touch upon, you know, you mentioned Laura Marling there as well as someone who's worked with Ethan Johns and Laura and Mumford & Sons and sort of acts that you've toured with in the past, right? So some really cool sort of English acts that sort of came out of the era that we're talking about.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, those sort of, late noughties, you know, early teens, I think a lot of that sort of folk music stuff became pretty sort of mainstream for a while there, and there was definitely a sort of a wave of bands coming through. So we were super lucky. Laura, particularly at the start, she came to Australia and we supported her on tour back then. And, you know, we hadn't even made our first album or anything at this point, maybe not even an EP. I think we had one song. But she came out and she needed a support band, but she also needed a drummer and a bass player. So the deal was basically, you guys get the show, but your drummer and your bass player have to play for Laura. So
right.
I think that was a pretty simple, easy deal for the guys to take her up on. But it didn't stop there. You know, we all got along really well. And we met Marcus while we were rehearsing for those shows. He came for a while to hang out. And then we got so much respect for Laura. I think she's one of the best songwriters of our generation, to be completely honest. And she was super lovely and ended up taking us all back to the UK and Europe and doing the same thing over there. We all supported her there, and Tim and Jake played bass for her and drums for her again. I don't know. We've just sort of stayed in touch over the years. You know, I think that folk sort of wave that came through, you do make a lot of friends and a lot of connections because you find yourself at a similar place and time and a similar point in life. And they've been pretty special friends to make. So We're actually in London right now, and I think we're trying our best to meet up with Ted from Mumford & Sons because we haven't seen him for a while. He's a lovely guy, so hopefully that can come together. But, yeah, nice bunch of people you meet, you know.
Yeah, and good, you're all going strong still now as well. Marcus got a new album out, so his own solo album now. So, yeah, right. Still going strong. Love it.
No, I appreciate it. Yeah, that's it.
Brilliant. Thanks very much for joining us, Killian. It's been a really enjoyable chat to you, and best of luck with the rest of the European tour. And yeah, look forward to that that long-awaited album to hopefully drop in not too distant future.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for having me on the show, guys. Really appreciate it.